grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 328 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. Chris Jordan, your host here, coming at you from Austin, Texas. So sorry for the technical issues tonight, folks. This will be a replay show, but welcome, 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 my lord. How about that? How about that amazing? I've got it right here. I'm going to pull my best Rush Limbaugh. I've got it right here in front of me, folks. The preliminary preliminary assessment on an unidentified aerial phenomenon. That's what we'll be going over tonight. That, and of course, the amazing podcast, My Alien Life, with Cameron Logan. We'll be talking with him about why he started this podcast and what this report means to him, what this report means overall to the disclosure community and to the community of UFO experiencers out there. People that we have had on the show regularly, like our good friend Seb Talk, people like Terry Lovelace, people like Aaron Montgomery, good folks like that. What this report means to them, what this report means to people like Cameron, as not only that, but host of My Alien Life. And we'll be getting into that. We'll be getting into so much more this evening. Please do make sure to stop on by, check us out online, dudesandbeer.com. And while you're there, make sure to stop on by and check out our Facebook page. That is where you can check out all of the fantastic news of the week that we post over there. Always starting up conversations, always got things going on. There's the announcement for Curious Realm. Please do remember, we are rebranding, folks. We will soon become the Curious Realm. We have reached pretty much the max of what we can do as Dudes and Beer, sadly. Not sadly. I mean, it's always great whenever you grow to capacity. It's just the fact that, like, we can't even place a Facebook ad anymore. So, yeah, here we go, everybody. From Mint Press News, revealed how the CIA turned Afghanistan into a failed narco state. We need to make sure to get Raul Diego from Mint Press back on. There's a great Atlas Obscura article that just came out about 10 archaeological mysteries in the United States. We posted a great video from Mike Turber today about the 88 satellites coming up from SpaceX. And Lego has revealed their first ever bricks made from recycled plastic bottles. That only took like 20, 30 years of revelation, right? It's one of those like, wow, really? They're made out of plastic. That should not have been a hard decision to make, Lego. But it finally came around, so make sure to stop on by Facebook, join the Dudes and Beer group that will soon become the Curious Realm group coming up in December. While you are online checking that out, make sure to stop on by the amazing True Hemp Science. True Hemp Science is where I go to get all of my CBD product. My doctor a few years ago prescribed me CBD as part of my supplementals for my anxiety. And shortly after that, I found Christopher, the owner, out at a farmer's market here in town. And my God, his product is amazing. I've been all around the states to numerous dispensaries and here to tell you some of the best stuff around. I use it every day. Stop on by. True Hemp Science is the website, truehempscience.com. Dude7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more. And while you're there, you also get two free edibles, a packet of two edibles, cookies or brownies, whenever you're there with your code Dude7. In addition to that, while you're online, make sure to stop on by our main sponsor, Podcast Cadet. Let's check out a little something from them. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun. Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code DUDES20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. That's right, folks. Stop on by Podcast Cadet today. Full disclosure, I am one of the owners and founders of Podcast Cadet. I started that because I saw so many people that were so many musicians that I worked with over the years that were getting advice from musicians that, not that they weren't good musicians, they just needed some help in a couple ways. So, yeah, as a former producer, I teamed up with some social media folk, things like that, and we got that program growing. Stop on by, check it out. DUDES20 is the code that you want to use. While you're online, make sure to stop on by and check out the amazing show, My Alien Life. If you have never checked this show out, folks, I am here to tell you, it is some fantastic discussion. If you like what we do here on Dudes and Beer, if you like the open discourse that we have about the UFO experience, the unabridged tales and stories of people who are experiencers, that's exactly what this show is. Recently, I had a fantastic two-part episode about exactly what we're talking about tonight. This amazing nine-page tell-all, right? Right, Cameron? The nine-page tell-all story of UAP disclosure. How about that? Welcome to the show, Cameron Logan. How are you today, sir?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me. Nine pages. If you listen to my show, you know I predicted three, so that's triple. Triple what I thought was going to come out. But really, it's if you condense it all down, you could actually get it all on three pages if mm-hmm. you took out all the fluff. So, yeah, I was right.
Yeah, if you took out all the parenthetical documentation of, like, what this means, all that kind of
right.
stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. The meat of it is
the appendix A and B. We don't need that.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because despite the fact that it came out, despite the fact that there is, and I mean, if you expected a grand revelation, folks, if you expected, like, you know, the last page to be like, oh yeah, and by the way, we didn't tell you about UFOs because, you know, that's who killed Kennedy, you know, I think you're right. looking for the wrong document. And we've said
I was speaking with Tom Carey and Donald Schmidt, and they kind of were hoping that Roswell would be in there, but no. Tom, sorry.
Well, and you know, the thing is, we can't expect Roswell to be in there. To put Roswell in there would mean that we would have to put Betty and Barney Hill in there.
We'd have to put them all. I'd have to be in there.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Precisely. Like Terry Lovelace would be in there. Sev Talk. All kinds of things. And not that they shouldn't be explored. Absolutely. But the question comes to bear, especially whenever you are talking about that concept of what the government is going to tell you is actually going on. We've held on this show the whole time that probably close to about 80% of what we are seeing is more than likely our technology being tested against our technology without their knowledge, one branch against the other. Explains a lot
you know,
of the...
I,
go ahead.
I think that what really speaks volumes about the report is right at the beginning, which says, quote, in response to a provision in Senate Report 116-223. Boom, yeah. There you have it. So, you know, that right there just ruins it immediately. And if there's going to be any real discord or discourse, rather, yeah, or anything tangible that we would glean from this type of report, it ain't going to happen because it's part of a Senate report. And neither the ODNI nor the Senate take each other seriously, I don't think. So there you have it. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, there is zero accountability when it comes to either, you know. It's kind of like whenever people are like, oh, yeah, well, you know, the CIA said this is true. Oh, there you go. Those are the people to listen to. Not that they get paid literally to lie. Like, that is their job description. We've said it before on this show numerous times. I would like you to find one time that the CIA has been pulled before Congress to testify and not be found to be lying.
Right.
So,
you know, this report, though, I mean, it's got a beautiful cover page. And I said that if they put it in a three ring binder with a clear orange cover on it with a bigger logo of the ODNI on there, it would look amazing. But then as soon as you open it, you know, there's nothing there, although they tried hard. I mean, on page four, there's an off colored kind of orangey tan box that says UAP collection challenges, and yeah, I'm trying to highlight that, which I don't even know what that even means and why it's there. Really, did it even make me question anything in it? Not really. It was just so lackluster and beige. It's just, the whole thing is a huge disappointment, a huge waste of time, and it must have cost millions. I don't know. Well, we don't have a price tag on it, but
yeah. And I mean, it's interesting though, the double speak that happens. We have Mike Turber on this show regularly, and he's worked in the defense industry, still holds a contractor number. And it's one of those, whenever you hear the Pentagon saying, yes, absolutely, this is a video. This is a real video. That's a video that was taken. You're correct. And it's kind of the same way here, where you see them. The sensors mounted on U.S. military platforms are typically designed to fulfill specific missions. As a result, those sensors are generally not suited for identifying UAPs. Is there a sensor that is?
And I'm not. One of the things that really made me question, you know, who is this report for? I don't know. Is it for the general public? No. I mean, Appendix A, definition of key terms. There's four key terms, and so there, you know, people who don't normally listen to my show or engage in this topic wouldn't really know what has been going on or what is in, you know, yeah, what are in the news stories, what they're seeing on CNN or Fox or whatever. You know, they kind of brush past those things. So, you know, this report really isn't for anybody. Basically, it was put out, and it was written because it was just part of Senate, the bill 116-233. It filled the requirement, and that is what it did, you know. So yeah, Basically they filled that requirement. They don't have to do anything else. They're done. And obviously the bill originally, which became law, wasn't specific enough to call out more detailed versions of different technologies or different, some of the things that the Navy has reported, the Department of Defense has reported, you know, their reports, which are also very, very lacking of information. But really, it filled all the requirements, and it's done. So it's not going anywhere else, I don't think. It shouldn't. Did I lose you?
I think, sorry about that. I think, like you were saying, it was done specifically for this reason and for this reason, literally just to say, yeah, we had a program that existed. Like, at some point they had to, yes, admit that a program existed. Yes, admit that they have looked into things, and that they are continually looking into things that they need to. But it gave us zero answers.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't think there would be. Did you think there'd be an answer?
No, absolutely not.
I didn't.
I've held the whole time that the whole reason that this had to happen was merely the fact of we are entering into a new age of technology, period. I mean, we're talking about hypersonic missiles, man. You know, like missiles and objects that are, moving 10,000 plus miles an hour across an ocean and systems that can target them. Now, where did this technology come from? Where did we just get it? It just randomly happened one day. People forget the fact that the computers that we go out and buy off the shelf are years behind what is being used in any government or government-funded laboratory.
Yeah. And, you know, you look, though, for example, on the Department of Defense website, and they do have interesting stories there. And, you know, on the 21st, oh, no, it was the 25th, one popped up, and so leaders discuss future war fighting on an unpredictable battle space. Now, that's interesting, but... You know, again, there's four paragraphs, and they've actually split it up into like 10 paragraphs, but each paragraph is one or two sentences. But it's interesting, and they sort of pique your curiosity and then kind of make you fall flat. I mean, there's nothing to the story, but it's still an interesting concept, and there are interesting things that pop up on the website, and that's defense.gov, and... Yep. Check it out sometime. Well, you're not going to get a lot of information, but it's interesting.
Well, and, you know, that's one of the things that we try to encourage people to do all the time. I am an RSS fiend. Go get you an RSS aggregator, folks. It's literally a news reader, how you follow blogs, even podcasts. You can follow RSS. You can follow Cameron's RSS. But you can follow defense.gov. If you want to know, like, where I pull all of the articles for the Dudes and Beer Facebook group and how fast I pull them, that's how. It's literally an RSS feeder on my tablet, on my phone. I follow things like defense.gov. I follow Jane's Defense Weekly, another great one to follow. Follow FBI, CIA.gov. You can follow all of these blogs, and whenever they release declassified documents, you'll see it. That's how the Black Vault gets a hold of them, other than FOIA request. But like one of the big things that we covered on this show a couple weeks ago, leading up to this announcement, Cameron, was the fact that the government a year ago said that they had full holographic technology that can be projected from a plane that is designed to fool FLIR and missile systems into thinking that there is another object moving faster than the airplane with a greater heat signature.
Absolutely.
Like, so when you hear about these technologies, when you hear about all this stuff, it's one of those... How do you explain it? You know, when you...
It was...
Go ahead.
Back in, like, 1998, I went to a fireworks display here, and they had a laser show. And I'd seen laser shows, and of course, later on, I mean, if you ever go to Disneyland and the California Adventure and see what they put on with lasers at night, you could see anything in the sky. So, back then, I remember seeing that and seeing them shoot these lasers across, hitting the clouds that were 7 miles across this lake and, you know, lighting these clouds up and projecting images out there. And I was like, wow. I mean, you could put anything out there and people could see that. And this is fairly, not new, but it was something that, that we were able to get as technology, non-military personnel could buy a laser now and go shoot it off into space and create an image, or do whatever you want. And it's amazing. And it's amazing technology. And that I could see in 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, we could do just about anything, Avi Loeb was talking about, taking a small 1 gram, sort of a facsimile of a spacecraft and using a laser to get it near light speed, in the next 50 years. So,
yeah.
There's so many things that you could do with lasers, and, we're seeing a lot of things out there right now that to me, in my opinion, and I don't mean to step on toes and piss people off, but, I think that's a lot of what we're seeing. And I think,
yep,
that we're using that and we're trying to figure it out and we're developing that, and it's for our benefit. So hopefully that, that's we're not necessarily in a Cold War, but I always say to tell people the Cold War has never really ended. I mean, the way that we interact with Russia now is really not much different than it was 40 years ago. It's just that technology and the way the media portrays it, it looks entirely different. So there you have it. I know I'm kind of rambling there a little bit, and there's a lot of things I want to say, but
feel free to say.
I just think there's a lot of things that we see that, like the one that they confirmed was a deflating balloon. I mean,
yep,
that's a really famous video, and here's this thing, cruising across the ocean,
yeah,
and to me it didn't look like anything. And the fact that they're all of a sudden these numbers are coming at us like, they had a video of something going 17,000 miles an hour. How do we know that?
Yeah.
We don't have anything that verifies that. We don't have anything that showed us that.
Yep.
We have somebody telling us that. So,
yes.
So we have some videos and we have some interpretations and we have some very, very, enthusiastic people telling us about these things who have also been UFO enthusiasts for themselves since they were children. So, David Freyer.
Well, and that's one of the big things that we've talked about is don't just swallow the lure and go under the boat. Because it's very easy to even right now to see the use of the term UFO denier starting to be used in reports and stuff like that. Really, it really kind of sets a mindset forth, and it really kind of starts setting forth that concept of psi warfare, psyops almost, and putting forth the fact of, if you don't believe what we're saying this is, or what we're saying this isn't in this case, then you have a problem. If you don't even acknowledge that this exists the way that we say it does, you have a problem. And I think that sets forth a bad precedent for questioning and for actively exploring the topic, like you're saying, to know that one of those videos was fully debunked as a deflated balloon moving in a rapid jet stream.
Right. I feel personally responsible for kind of doing the same thing. I had created over a year ago, I started creating an artist rendition of something that I had seen in the sky, tic-tac shape. And, it was what it was, and it was a very accurate depiction of what it was. And, I kind of let people use their imagination a little bit and kind of spurred them on a little bit, which I probably shouldn't have done, but I just kind of wanted to have fun. I had no idea what I saw. You know, I had no idea what that was. You know, I've seen some weird shit in my life and most of my life. And I'm skeptical about sometimes about my own judgment of what I saw.
Sure.
And I look at it. I've found in my lifetime that, you know, the human brain is such a powerful thing and it's such a powerful tool. And it can take things that we normally see and twist them. It can take just about any sort of emotion that we feel and it can twist it. It can take things that we hear and that we taste and that we smell and turn it into something completely different. So, and it has to do with circumstance and it has to do with experience. So there's that.
Yeah.
And I see how it could happen where people see things. Did they see things? You know, have people seen things that could have come from somewhere else other than Earth? Something that isn't earthly, you know, alien technology. Have people seen it? I believe they have. But, you know, in the cases that I've seen and the examples that I've seen, I'm so not convinced after seeing that
yeah.
I'm even more skeptical about other reports. So, you know, there are some people out there who, you know, last night I watched Fire in the Sky. I don't know how many times I watched that.
Oh, God, I love that movie.
Amazon, and I don't even know why I watched it, but I, you know, I had two of the guys on the show on the 45th anniversary of it, you know, and I message Goulet once in a while about that. And to me, you know, here's this huge story and then Travis is missing and then he comes back. And, you know, so that one, you know, has all the elements in it that really, really intrigues me. And, yeah. You know, that one's crazy and creepy. So,
but prime example of what you were just saying a minute ago where, hey, maybe you acted a little irresponsibly. Prime example of how our community of disclosure movement, UFO experience, everything else can get so carried away. Like if you follow Mike Rogers online, he's fully one of those people that's like, hey, anybody want to know anything else about my life? Like, I'm a human being. More than that one night and the aftermath of that happened to me.
Right.
Like, I'm an artist. I'm an author. Like, musician. All kinds of stuff. You know? And even you, Cameron. You know, it's a... It can be hard not to get caught up in the trappings, you know. Even you as an experiencer and someone who has seen these things in their life has the wherewithal to even doubt yourself.
And, well, I mean, sometimes you have to.
Well, you have to be willing to.
Because I you know, I have that information. You know, that information is in my head. And I get to play it over as often as I want to.
Yeah.
And or, you know, any information that I come across. So I can look at it as skeptical or as objective or as a believer. But I like to look at it objectively. And, you know, it comes to the forefront from time to time. And I get to rethink it, especially with new circumstances and new evidence and new thought process, even, you know?
And I mean, like I've shared with my audience on this show numerous times, the whole reason why I love having people like yourself, Sev Talk, Terry, Aaron, folks like that, experiencers, whether it be UFOs, paranormal, what have you, like I myself am an experiencer. Not necessarily in the world of UFOs, but in a different realm. And it's one of those, nobody else and the facility I was in had a shared experience with what I did, but it was a life-stealing moment and something that changed my path in the world. I will never, ever deny the fact that, like, I felt the presence of God that time and numerous times in my life.
Right.
And, you know, if I was to tell somebody that while serving, I felt the call and the presence of my God calling me to go serve him, there are people that would call me just as crazy.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of skeptics in the world and non-believers of all kinds of things in the world. But, you know, I mean, give people a break. I mean, obviously, the people believe things for a reason. And, you know, we should never question why somebody believes what they do. I mean, we can question their belief system and what they believe. But, you know, why a person is, you know, was pegged with that, with the diversity goes of their own life and why they're different from us goes back, you know, a lot longer than we could possibly imagine. And what it means to them and things mean, is really not even relevant to us. So, you know, give people a break and, yeah, listen. I mean, it's good to listen, and that's what I try to do.
Well, with that in mind, let's kind of switch gears real quick and talk about you and how you came to the mission of My Alien Life. Because, like I said at the beginning of the show, I enjoy listening to it. You're one of the many podcasts that I listen to just kind of when I'm tooling around the house, that kind of stuff. And it is because it is such an absolutely genuine conversation. Like we were saying pre-show, that's kind of what you're after, is that deep conversation with somebody. And you can't get that in a scripted way. It's got to be an organic conversation in order to get that. But what was it that led you into the mission of this podcast and this show, or your shows to begin with?
You know, I think it's the way I do things. You know, even as a kid growing up, I would see, you know, other kids, the parents of other kids, and thinking, you know, well, you know, if I'm ever a dad, I'm going to do this. You know, or if I ever have children, I'm going to do this. Maybe I didn't like the way this was done. And I always remembered those things, and they always kind of stuck with me. It could have been anything. Could have been sports. You know, if I ever play hockey as an adult, I'm going to. It was one of those kind of things. So it was listening to. You know, I used to love to listen to Larry King when he first started when his show was syndicated, it was huge.
Yep.
And then listening to Art Bell, you know, one of the things that, you know, I'd stay up late and listen to Art Bell. And of course, you know, one of the things that made that show drag on was it was so many commercials, and they were so long. And God, it was just infuriating. And you know, I thought I would love to do something like that. But
are
just,
you set,
you know,
and secure in the silver
talk.
Market?
Exactly. So, listening to those over and over again, you don't forget those things for sure. And they really, really, you know, just when things were getting interesting, boom, there's a commercial. Or you know, Art would kind of go off and share his thoughts and what he was wondering at the time, which is fine, and that's what I liked about him. But I thought, God, I would love to just have these people just talk, and I want to listen to these people, and I would love to hear these people just rattle on, and that's what I do. And what ends up happening in this past 2 weeks, I've had two shows where I had two guests on at the same time, and you know, where the magic happens is when, you know, we're talking and one of my guests is talking and the other guest is listening and I'm listening and we just fall into it. And you can tell, you know, all of a sudden there's this dead air and, you know, it's because we're immersed in this, this story. We're listening to it and, you know, we're just, you know, like Richard Doty or Tom Carey just stops talking or Donald Schmidt stops talking and we're just kind of stunned there for a moment because, you know, we want them just to keep going and we didn't have anything. I was prepared, but I wasn't ready to hit it right there. No, you know,
and sometimes you get gobsmacked, like even as a host, great. Even whenever
it's the best time.
It's beautiful. And that's just it's it. Awesome, like as somebody who worked in radio, I don't understand the concept of like hard editing a show like this or like yours. Because it is that organic conversation. That's what makes it go back right. And, you know, that's what makes somebody interested. And like the only thing we ever edited out was commercials for people that subscribed. That was it. Right. Right. Like, good God. Otherwise, if you start editing, who knows what you chopped up in an interview? Like, you could make a guest say anything, man. And when you're talking the guests, like what you have on your show, like what I've had on mine, whistleblowers, things like that, buddy, you don't want to chop that up.
Well, and you got to keep it rolling. I mean, you know, I had early on, I had, you know, like somebody would say, oh, I really got to go to the bathroom. You know, it's been like 40 minutes. I'm like, okay, you know, go for it. You know, but when the chemistry is there and you got to make it happen, things just roll and they don't stop and people keep talking. And for the life of me, it just creates a story that just develops on its own. I really don't have to do much. And I feel guilty from time to time about that. But then again, you know, I'm there. I'm a listener too. I want to listen to the story. So, it becomes this thing that's bigger than me. And it's just amazing when these guys just all of a sudden, like, I had Dan Willis, he's asking, you know, he's on the show and he starts up right away that he's going to be asking Richard Doty questions. He's got like 35 of them. Like, well, I don't even need to be there, you know? So, yeah. So it was 2 hours of that. You know, I have people all the time, you know, and that was like Doty's, yes. Last Friday was Doty's like maybe fifth show. And, I just hate Doty and I can't believe what he did and Paul Berkowitz and blah, 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 blah. Every time I listen to him, well, there you go. Every time I listen to him, you're listening to him every chance you get
more than once.
Exactly. So, that's what's happening there. You can love him. You can hate him. I think he's a wonderful storyteller and I could, you know, the biggest thrill for me in podcasting is, you know, he's on Zoom and all of a sudden, you know, I start the Zoom meeting and boom, there is his face is right there filling my 27-inch iMac. Beautiful. Yeah. This is why I do it. I see his smiling face there and Rick Doty's there. And then, you know, Don Schmidt and, you know, it's just really cool to see those guys. You know, and I've never met these guys in person, and I will. And, you know, I just need to show up at more events. But I'm same. A busy dude, and I have a lot of candles burning on both ends. So I'll get out there.
I think you and I may be time sharing the same kiln for for all of our pottery, man, because we are both just hands full all the time. And like I said before the show in our pre-show conversation, you and I have been just kind of circling around in the same communities for years. And that's right. How I came across your show and came to love it. And I'd like you to let's kind of depart a little bit now and get into your experience. What was it that made you want to share your experiences that you'd had in your life? Because
I didn't want, I never wanted to share it. I still don't, but,
we'll share it.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I'm going to share.
I know, I'm just playing.
I don't want to, and I don't like to. And the reason is I don't really like to talk about myself.
Sure.
The other reason is, you know, there's a couple of experiences that I had that I don't mind talking about that weren't particularly terrifying. They were kind of neutral. And, you know, most of these things that have happened to me have been terrifying. The other side of the coin is, so I'm writing a book, and, you know, I'm writing about my own life and, you know, things that have happened with my parents and you know, the book reads like, I'm not going to say fiction. It reads like a novel. I should say it that way.
Great.
And because that's the way I like to write, but it's about me and it's about my experiences, but there's dialogue and there's stories. And I think it just is nicer. It's a nicer read because I've read a lot of books about UFOs and I was going to say a bad word, but some of them aren't that great. And so I'm not saying that I'm a better writer or I can do this better, but you know, it's in a way that I think that somebody who's not searching out a book about UFOs could pick this up and maybe enjoy it. So yeah, that's kind of the goal right there. So again, there's like right now, you know, I really put it down about a month ago because, you know, there's this story about my dad that they just, I don't like to tell, and it's really not that bad. But for some reason in our history, that was just a bad moment. Those weren't good times, and I don't like going there.
Sure.
But it's part of the story and it's very necessary. So it's in there. And, not that you're going to know what it is and you're not going to feel that because it's about what I was going through at the time. So it's not, you know, there's a bit of that, and there's a lot of that rather that makes me not want to, you know, tell these stories. And sometimes they were traumatic. Sometimes I'm worried about, other people, you know, my friends who were involved and my little brother who was involved and, not quite knowing if, you know, there's this question that I write about, and there's this, well, something happens in the book where, you know, I'm questioning what my parents know. You know, do they know that you know, I've been having these experiences, and possibly my little brother has too. And because, you know, I brought it up and I was kind of blown off, you know, like, well, whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And it really, you know, it really kind of took me to a place, not a good place, because, you know, when you're a kid, you're expecting, you know, you're expecting your parents to keep you safe from just about anything. But, you know, here was something that I found unbelievably frightening, which is an understatement. And, you know, kind of, you know, being brushed aside, you know, that, you know, not even wasn't even able to address it at all. And so there's that in there. So and that's something that I hate talking about, but it's necessary. But yeah, so things happened. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, that, you know, we lived in an area that was well off the beaten path, a town of less than 200 people, and most of the time well under 200 people. And so, you know, you kids could go out and do things all around town that you wouldn't normally do in a town. When you're 7, 8 years old, 9 years old, you could walk, you know, 10 miles from your house and play out in the wide expanses of the Montana desert, and you were okay. So you know,
Yeah. Well, and with that in mind, I mean, just how much of that played into the fact that you wanted to help other people tell their stories and that you wanted to create this? Because, I mean, of course, like you were saying, having those experiences as a child that were not necessarily pleasant experiences, and even later in life, what was it that you wanted to help you make this community that is My Alien Life, where people can come and share their stories?
Well, and that wasn't what it was even about. Me not wanting to tell my story, but then again, it was what it really had to do with was having a commune with these people and trying to figure out what in the hell happened and what was it that I went through.
Yeah.
And so here's the moments that I was really looking for, and one was, shortly, rough, almost 3 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I don't remember, but somebody, it was a really, really early rough podcast I did, and it was about this basically an alien that it was in my bedroom. And so somebody, I don't give you all the details. I give you enough of the story where you get it and sink your teeth into it, but there's details that I omit because I want people to contact me and maybe we could find common ground and it'll help me understand if their story is legit, because maybe they will touch upon something that I experienced and it'll be similar. So, I get this message from this guy and, we messaged afterwards for quite some, we still do. And, he asked me a specific question when I was going through this, when I woke up in the middle of the night and I see this thing at the foot of my bed, did I see, and I'm not going to repeat what he said, but that's between him and I. And I said, yes. And that's exactly what I saw. And it had to do with, I don't even want to go there, but this person saw the same thing, and it's wow. An unusual thing. And no, I just didn't think anybody would have ever come up with that. And it was such an unusual thing that, I probably would have mentioned that when I'm telling that story or in the podcast, but it was just so weird that I just didn't want to bring that into the story. And it just, I was stunned. So I'm looking, at Facebook Messenger, and I'm looking at these words, and just staring at them, and I could feel a heartbeat in my face, and I'm looking at this over and over and over and over, and I said, yeah, I did see that, and that's exactly what I saw. And he described it just like I am going to just describe it in my book. I mean, it's just, it's just, there's no other way to put it. And it was just so unusual. And I was like, how in the hell, because if we're talking about some sort of figment, some sort of imaginary sleep induced whatever, and all of a sudden you wake up and, of course you can call it whatever you want, and people have these experiences, but to have somebody have the same experience that I had,
yeah,
and they could describe my experience basically, and I could describe their experience, it's mind blowing. So what does that mean? And again, I'm still a skeptic, but again, the mind does crazy shit, and yeah. Could have been, but I don't know. But that's really, that's what I'm doing, is trying to communicate with people and sort of figure this out and decide and come up with reasons and maybe some scenarios of why this is happening, why we're experiencing the same thing. And you know, and some of those people that maybe didn't have an experience like mine, you know, I'm interested in that too, because, you know, it's a bigger universe maybe than we think, which it is. Mm. And, you know, it's just, there's different ways to explore the topic, and the community really comes out in droves. And it's amazing to me, and it always is, that there are so many people who are interested in this, because you can't really get even a number on it or even figure it out until, you know, you're out there asking the questions. So
yeah,
one day I want to stand on the street and just start grabbing people at random and talking to them, because I really want to know randomly, not, you know, just general, you know, do you believe in aliens, but specific questions. But the questions have to be understandable, and they have to be different, you know, something that really, really grabs them and stops them dead in their tracks, and they're engaged, and they can, we can talk about that.
Well, and it's important to have the conversation about what happens to people and about why it happens to people. And now, granted, even just going through here on Inside the Guest Studio, things like that, some of the people that you have interviewed, like Whitley Strieber, you know, Daryl Sims, that kind of stuff. How many people across the scope that you have interviewed have similar stories, have that, I guess, common thread amongst their story?
Well, I got to say Whitley, and that was,
what an incredible opportunity.
Seriously. You know, I watched Fire in the Sky and then watched Communion a couple of weeks ago, and I posted some stuff about Communion on Facebook, but, you know, Whitley's stories are so Whitley, and he knows I told him this, and I've told other people this, but I picked up Communion, you know, just not long. I was living and going to college, and right after or during that time I was walking near campus and stopped at a yard sale, and I saw that creature on the, you know, cover of the book in this yard sale, and this really nice book. So I grabbed it. And, so just, you know, I had it, didn't touch it. And then I heard Whitley on, him being interviewed by Larry King.
Mm.
And, which later on Larry said to Whitley, I don't believe anything you say, but I absolutely believe that you believe it. And, but you know, cause Whitley, there's a lot going on there, and he's had a lot of different experiences, and not just with aliens. So,
absolutely.
But, his book scared the living hell out of me. So, so much so that, you know, I got into it, and I didn't read into it too far until I had to put it down, and I don't remember. But it took me a long time, you know, more than a year to, pick that up and finish the book. And, you know, I'm not going to read it again. I mean, it just, there's things in there that you know, hit too close to home. So there you have that.
Yeah,
you know?
I was going to ask, was it just it's simply too much for you as a, not just an experiencer, but a multiple experiencer within your life?
Yeah, and it's too much. And you, then you have guys like, you mentioned Daryl Sims, who I find extremely interesting because, you know, I think, I don't compare him to me in any way, but, you know, he does, I mean, I think that, in my mind, I think that, you know, he does what he does because he has this unbelievable interest in the, like I do. And then he goes about it a little different, you know, differently, and, tries to meet people in different ways, you know, and he's pulling, particles out of their body and implants or whatever. And, which, you know, that's a whole another scope of interest that, that
more gallons, wires and all kinds of stuff.
I mean, it's, I, you know, I don't even like to think about that. And, you know, and Travis Walton's experience, you know, and he's out there talking about that. His was, you know, just horrifying and horrible, And yet, yeah. You know, we have people out there who talk about these benevolent beings who are there for our own good, and to shut down nuclear missiles and whatever. And, you know, I totally disagree with that 100%. But, you know, that's my own opinion. So,
well,
I unfortunately am biased. And when I hear the benevolent part of that, I think, well, maybe they didn't experience anything, or maybe that, you know, it was so vastly different, or maybe their mind has been altered. I don't know, because I don't really believe there's any benevolence involved, period.
Well, and let's get into that a little bit, because I find that as somebody who studied sociology, psychology, things like that, and yet still am an experiencer and a full-on believer, 100% in the paranormal. And like Larry would say, I believe you believe what you believe, 100%. Because your experience is your experience, and nobody was there. To say that anybody doesn't process the world through the filter of their life is just silly.
Right.
However, is it to you that perhaps you've only had an experience with one of these many, perhaps, quote, and I've got my air quotes up for you radio folk out there.
Yeah.
The quote, one species, you know, because, I mean, it's one of those things like, for instance, I'm a redhead, and somebody may be like, every redhead I've ever met is shifty. I don't trust a redhead. Well, no offense,
it's
but
true.
But you haven't met me.
Right.
You know, well, you by know, the I way, think, I got I some great land for sale, Cameron.
I'm in.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, is it the fact that perhaps you are filtering this through your own experience, which, yes, granted, has to your own admission been just under Travis Walton level traumatic for you on on some levels?
You know, there's something that that bothers me more than anything, and it's the anthropomorphism of ufology. I mean,
okay,
all of these aliens that look like, I mean, they have human traits,
sure,
you know, and shape, and they do things that are human like, and even though they may be just horribly ugly, they eat and they breathe, and, you know, and
sure,
the film industry has had them succumb to microorganisms, and they couldn't survive our whatever on this planet. But I think that that's odd to me. So, you know, there's that. Yeah. There's the evil anthropomorphism or anthropomorphic aliens, and there's the benevolent anthropomorphic, I'm sorry, that's a hard word right
it
now.
It is.
Aliens, and so you have the evil, you have the benevolent, but they still kind of look like us. And to me, I mean, this vast universe, and it's so huge that you know, they could look like anything. And you know, simply put, I try to believe that, of course, you know, in the Occam's razor, that the simplest answer to me would be that, you know, these are organisms that are space travelers, and doesn't it's not like they're making a journey, you know, through wormholes and through whatever to get here in these ridiculously short times, instead of, you know, being out in space for a billion and a half years. But they could have been out there for a billion and a half years, and just, they've always been out there, or they've, you know, for a short time they were somewhere else, and then all of a sudden they're space travelers.
Yeah.
And they found a place here that is safe. Obviously we have we have these, this amazing solar system with these planets that, you know, they're able to protect us, you know, like Jupiter can take some comet hits that we could have maybe later on, you know, thousands of years or millions of years later if Jupiter wasn't there. And so, you know, we have this moon that protects us. And so we have all these things here in place. However, you know, it still is Earth and we have oxygen, which is it's an oxidizer. And, you know, it's corrosive to a lot of things, and it's a harsh, there's a harsh chemistry down here, and there's all this salt water and all these things that we've evolved to live with, and we do it very well, but, you know, it took a very, very, very long time. So, you know, we couldn't even get out of a spacecraft without protection to visit Mars. I mean, we talk about visiting Mars and getting there is the least of our problems. The travel and radiation, there's so many different things, you know, that we don't even hear about. So many different things. It just isn't the time it takes to get there. There's many, many, many processes that we have to figure out in order to travel and you know, distance and time is just two things. But
well, and it's just the fact of anything going there for a long, long time, it ain't coming back.
Right. And so you know, I just think that we're a good spot to hang out above, and you know, they can observe us and maybe pop down and check us out from time to time for short periods of time. Again, you know, we're probably not as interesting as we think we are, especially to a species that would be so advanced.
Yep.
And have obviously, you know, they don't think like we do. They couldn't. I mean, they just couldn't. And so there would be so many differences. So what the agenda would be, we probably couldn't even figure that out. So to make them appear like us and to for us to feel like they're benevolent and they're you know, on our side and they got our back, and you know, when shit goes down and crap blows up, you know, they're going to be there for us. There's no freaking way. I mean, because they're number one. Their number one goal is to perpetuate their species, and that's it.
There's
whatever it takes for them to do it, they'll do it.
I would challenge you to find... And this is a brazen statement that I'm about to make, Cameron, but I would say intergalactically, I would challenge you to find any species that is not ultimately about the persistence of its own species.
Absolutely. And we would do just about anything. And we would do anything to make sure that we would blow the shit out of any other race that even if we didn't feel that they were a threat. I mean, they show up. I mean,
the words of Reagan spring into my mind whenever I think about that. How quick would the nations of the world forget their differences?
Right.
And that's what I see happening right now. I mean, just to loop this conversation right back to the beginning, I really do see this as, man, you know, there's so much coming out. When you're talking about technology and technological leaps, like, man, all of 5-6 months ago, we were talking, it wasn't even talked about in the news that CERN made matter out of light.
Right.
We made matter out of light, man. That is like two steps away from replicator. Give me an espresso. Replicator, feed the world. Replicator, give me the star fuel I need to get to Jupiter. We don't have to dig for lithium. We can just have it made. You know, that's mind numbing. to think that. And yet still, that's the cusp that we're on technologically as a people. And when I hear you, Cameron, talking about straight up as someone who studied, like I said earlier, psychology and sociology, when I hear you talk about the anthropomorphization, there you go,
nice job.
of the alien intellect and the attitude and the fact of, yes, would we not be Galileo if we were going among the stars? Would we not have that altruistic aspect of we're going where no man has gone before? Isn't that what aliens would be doing? Wouldn't they have that concept of like, no, they're beneath the, like, technologically, they haven't made that leap. Don't mess with them. No. That's horrifying to even think. And even Stephen Hawking, one of the greatest minds ever, not even of our time, ever, was like, anybody trying to contact aliens and tell them where we are, stop.
Yeah, no shit. That, like, and that was another article in the New York Times the other day. I was like, you know.
Go ahead.
You're basically saying your next meal is here.
Yeah. Like, hey, man, if they can travel among the stars and travel that vast distance, anything they have would be like 98% better than ours. So maybe we should keep ourselves quiet and just observe instead of sending invitations.
Well, yeah, that's a question. I mean, you know, what should we do? I mean, and then the other thing, you know, here's something else. Yeah, technology. You know, there's so many part of the me who have said that, you know, we have this huge appetite for technology, and we're so interested in moving ahead and doing all these things that we want to do, you know, 10,000 years in the future. Well, you know, that's ultimately going to be our demise, because, you know, technology is on a planet that's made out of dirt and water, you know, is going to kill us.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're already, you know, coming up. I don't remember what nuclear power plant it is. That's, north of New York City, 40 miles, but, you know, they didn't get their permit they wanted for the next 20 years. It's been around 40 years. That's the end of its life and it's done. And, you know, there was people that were lobbying to get this thing back online and start it back up. And, you know, it was going to require over $1 billion worth of work, and they didn't care. You know, it was like, let's do it anyway, and we'll fix it as we go. Well, that's a nuclear power plant. We don't, that shit doesn't happen. So, there's that. And, you know, I'm not saying that nuclear is evil, and there's gotta be a way to figure it out and to do it safely, but we're not going to figure out and do it safely before we have another Fukushima or Chernobyl times 10, you know. It's going to be a lot worse before it gets better.
We got one going on in China as we speak.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't know anything about it.
Nothing. I mean, good Lord, look at it. I mean, right now, Cameron, it is coming out, the fact that this virus that has shut the world down may very well, like, we persecuted a dude for a year for saying it may have come from a lab. Going, that guy's a nut job. What's he talking? Oh, come on, you're crazy, guy. But be darned if that isn't the going best odds on bet right now. You know,
well, and it's not that we're not, and again, that's another thing that we're manipulating that we shouldn't be. The thing that bothers me most, it's a virus, and right now it's a really bad cold and it's killing a lot of people, but, you know, I just feel that has a potential to compound and become something even worse. And, you know, I don't see it going away. I mean, you know, when we were faced with polio and we were shutting things down seasonally in the United States for 40 years, including swimming pools and movie theaters, and people forgot about that, you know. But, and ask the people, you know, post-World War II and in through the 50s and early 60s, and what that was like. And, you know, they're thinking we're a bunch of babies right now. But no, they're taking this seriously, too, because the potential of it could get even worse. And who knows? I mean, this thing could just mutate and be out of control even worse than it is now. And we don't know. I mean, we don't know what lab-created organisms like that do.
Well, and that's just it, especially whenever you're talking about the world of superbugs to begin with. Like, we literally just got to, and don't get me wrong, I play with electronics. Like, 91% isopropyl alcohol is my friend. I love nothing more than the smell of a doctor's office. Because of the antiseptic and the alcohol, it just reminds me of being at work and meticulously cleaning faders and things like that. But my God, the overuse of things like that has literally led to superbugs and all that kind of stuff that are antibiotic resistant. And, you know, it's funny to me that the one thing in like every old school sci-fi story that saves us is the microbes on Earth, the germs. And here we are up against this moment of great disclosure while this huge germ is taking over the Earth at the same time. Like, you may as well just call it red weed, you know? but it's like you were saying, the anthropomorphizing, the assuming the fact that these entities intend the best may not be the best solution.
Well, and yeah, and they're not like us.
Yeah.
You know, we aren't like them. They're not like us. And you know, it took us, you know, you know, 7 billion years to get to where we are right now.
Yeah.
You know, so some strange things happened to some other molecules somewhere else in the, you know, maybe in the galaxy, who knows? But, yeah. You know, it didn't turn out the same way it turned out here. There's just no way, and it could look vastly different. Statistically, I would suppose, and I'm no statistician, and I'm not a math guy, but I would think that they would be completely different. But then again, you know, statistics works in mysterious ways, and you know, the standard deviation may have caused, you know, some organism somewhere to resemble us, but you know, its agenda would be completely different. You know, ultimately, you know, we're all about where we're going to get our next meal, not about how we're going to get to Mars.
You know, I had that conversation with somebody in the Dudes and Beer group just the other day about the concept of crop circles. And they were like, oh, you know, it's been proven most crop circles are fake. I'm like, yes, modern crop circles. However, accounts of crop circles in the area of the UK and Europe go back smooth into the 1500s, like straight up to the days of the Black Plague, you know, where people had better things to do than spend 8 hours in the darkness trying to make a crop. Like, they were literally busy living. They were not busy about their fame as a hoaxer.
Right.
That is an utterly modern phenomena.
Well, and there's other things too, you know. I mean, you know, crop circles are sort of a very visual clue that something happened, and maybe we can't determine, you know, what that is, and we may not ever, but there's things that are, you know, non-visual and things that are probably happening every day that we don't even notice. You know, it's we become, again, a community or a species, rather, of distraction, where we just, you
oh,
know,
God, yes.
we can barely sit through. We can't sit through the news. I can't, you know,
no.
I unfortunately cannot sit through the news. I need it in like 30 seconds. Give it to me. And that's the way we are. And you know, it changes the way we have lived in just the last 10 years, especially. And we are different. We're very different.
We're
becoming more different.
I had a video platform owner tell me a couple years ago, literally about 2 years ago, that my episodes viewing-wise, like, I just happen to know this platform owner. You know, it's a YouTube-type platform. And he was like, just so you know, like, you may want to think about cutting your episodes into, like, 30-minute segments, because, like, at about 30 minutes, you know, like, numbers change. And I'm like, I do not care.
Yeah, I don't either.
I was like, yep. If somebody does not have the attention, and this is... I love you, audience. I love all of you. And I know that, hey, life happens. We all don't have time to listen to it. Like, good God, man, episode 300 of this episode was 8.5 hours, Cameron. You know, I understand if somebody ain't got time for that in this modern day and age. You know what I mean? But I wasn't going to not do the content, you know?
Well, and you know, I could do 30 minute episodes, but I know two guys in Canada who listen to me all the time, and they certainly want to see it here an hour and a
brother,
half.
Brother, so, you know, there are topics.
I think of those guys all the time.
Well, it's just the fact of, hey, man, sometimes 30 minutes is the preamble to the conversation.
Right.
You know, like, that's what it takes for somebody to literally tell their story and their account before you even start the conversation, you know? And to not give it that credence, I think, does a huge disservice, not just to the show and the story, but to the community and the message.
Well, you know, I'm the first one who will admit that I know a lot about a lot of different things, but I'm no expert at many things. So, you know, whether it be ufology, and I would love to know more about physics.
Sure.
But, you know, it's just, that's not the way I'm wired and never really have been. So, you know, I have, you know, an hour, 90 minutes. I think that's good for what we do.
That's a prime.
But, you know, we're also playing to a host of people who are listening to us on the drive to work.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's 20 minutes. Well, you know, listen to us again tomorrow. And,
yeah.
You know, maybe you'll have to catch a show and listen to it 3 days in a row to get it all. However, it's well going to be worth it. And, you know, it's what it's about. It's about the whole story, or as close as we can get to it.
Well, and really it's about sharing that story of humanity and that common story, that common thread, that common gut feeling thread of what is going on in the world around us. And even tonight, Cameron, like I was saying earlier, we socially have been circling around each other for years in communities and Facebook groups, things like that. And even to make this connection tonight feels so utterly organic, you know, and there's that feeling of sharing and community. And that's what I'm here to build. That's why I'm literally rebranding this show, is so that we can take that concept to a larger audience. And for you, not just as an experiencer, Cameron, but as a host, what does it mean for you, just to bring it all back home in the last few minutes? What does this announcement from the government mean to you? I mean, for me, as someone who has worked in the halls that I've worked in, and the shows that I've worked in, for me, I wouldn't say it's absolutely hollow. I would say it's the best that they can do without spilling a lot. And they had to, like I said, they had to kind of do it in order to tell us eventually where some of this technology came from. Because we're going to be entering into a whole new world of tech in the next year that is phenomenal. But
I had asked Tom Schmidt and I'm sorry, Donald Schmidt and Tom Carey, you know, who have been on their own doing work on Roswell for decades.
Yep.
I had asked them, you know, what their version of UFO research would look like, you know, versus what our U.S. government you know, maybe, you know, the Navy or whoever is investigating these UAPs, you know, how would that differ, you know? And I think it was when was in 2007 and Harry Reid basically yep. started a special program for investigation. You know, what did that $22 million buy America in the way of research? And, you know, what would Schmidt and Kerry do with $22 million, and how would that look, you know, for them to do the research, and how would it look for the U.S. government to do the research? I mean, obviously, yeah. it's going to be totally different. So I want to know what the difference is, and nobody's going to ever be able to tell me that. But it would be interesting to find out. I'm ready to see.
Yeah, yeah, and precisely. I mean, there have been people like Harry Reid who have been doggedly pursuing this for years. He was one of the people that actually put forth the legislation against chemtrails that went through. Like, you could call people crazy all day long for saying that they believe in chemtrails. You know what? We passed a law against it. So don't tell me that the technology doesn't exist. They're talking about dimming the sun right now, like straight up Mr. Burns status. And there are people like Harry Reid who, God bless him, his son was the whole reason behind the kerfuffle in Nevada, you know. And it,
I don't even remember what it was, but I posted it on Facebook, and it was in an acronym, and had to do with chemtrails, and basically I said it was the, or I suggested, or just made up this little blurb that said that the United States government, and the acronym was RAID, and it was basically removing aliens from the planet, or keeping them, you know, building this chemical dome that they really couldn't get through by, you know, these chemtrails. And I had a couple people who were kind of prominent in the UFO community. They're like, "Oh, really, Cameron?" And you know, what the hell's the difference? You know, how is my story any bigger or wilder than shit that we've already heard? You know, we don't know. And so let's come up with, you know, something. Let's find out. You know, I'm not out there, you know, proposing that there's a huge conspiracy about chemtrails. What I'm there to propose is that we think about, you know, what is going on, and maybe, you know, trying to figure out how we can get some answers of things that we've seen and that have occurred, and maybe try to find out why and how.
Well, and you know, it's like we've said numerous times on this show, if you want to go into conspiracy theory, folks, let's talk about, you know, the fact that until the last 500 years of humanity, the Earth was flat. To say otherwise was anathema. You would be burned at the stake.
It's not still?
No. Believe it or not. Oh, well, I mean.
Man, that's okay being a podcaster. That was one of the, I'm still living with my questions of the last Flat Earth show that I had. So,
and hey, you know,
pretty harsh at times, but
You know, it's one of those that, hey, I'm willing to have that conversation. I'm willing to give somebody that time because, you know, hey, for a long time, like I said, it was anathema to think so. And it took a bunch of people with open hearts and open minds to sit back, talk about the data and theorems that they had, and or rather hypotheses, and then come up with theorems to test the hypotheses to find out. But we had to be willing to have that conversation, Cameron. And that's what's important, you know? Like, we I think that of anything is probably the most important thing to come out of this document. Probably the most important thing to come out of this U.S. government report is the fact that some people are willing to have the conversation. Some people are finally willing to say, yes, okay, there is something. And you know, hey, it goes through a lot in there about, once again, sensors, data, technology that we know exists, that this is not.
Absolutely.
So,
you know,
go ahead.
One of the things that really disappoint people is when I talk about Area 51 and I want to talk about test pilots and American aircraft that have been built out there and the amazing people that flew those. I have people that hate that.
Yeah, like the U-2. That was the home base for the U-2 for years.
Oh my God, what an incredible story that was, you know, and what an incredible life those people led, you know, and putting that thing into the air, and what a shit show in reality that was, you know, getting that Hulk up in the air and making sure that we didn't kill a guy every time we refueled it when they're on their way to fly over Russia, you know, and the different refueling strategies and things like that. It's an incredible story, you know, and that's technology. I guess it doesn't sound good because it's, you know, it was such a problematic and hard thing to accomplish to get that thing to fly and to get that many miles underneath its wings, but it's an incredible story and you know,
flown until very recent history with great success.
Exactly.
Other than once.
Right.
And shot down and randomly.
And there was so many near misses, but we just kept doing it and doing it. It was just incredible that even took place at all. And that's one of my favorite stories. And people are like, we don't want to hear that.
Well, and you know, it's interesting that you even say that, because that's not what they want to hear. And that's what I was getting to with the point of Mike Heston earlier. You know, Mike Rogers, Mike Heston
right.
Rogers,
right.
You know, right. is the fact of, anybody want to hear other stories? Anybody want to hear something else? You know? And when we dog it, it's not that it's bad to doggedly chase a topic, but it's bad to doggedly chase a headline.
Yeah.
You know? And it's bad to doggedly chase a story in the guise of truth to catch a headline. So, I mean, the fact that you have these hard conversations, you have the conversations with people, like you were saying, that even make your own experience uncomfortable, I think is hugely important, because it calls into question even your own experience, which you yourself, like you said, are willing to do.
Got to do it.
Yeah.
Got to do it.
Now, before we let you go, Cameron, and thank you so much for your time today. Thank you so much for your absolute unabridged honesty on all this stuff, even your own personal experience, because, like you were saying, very, very rough to talk about for a lot of people, including yourself. What does the future of this community hold for you? What do you hope for over the next few years? Because, of course, like we're saying, even the fact that they are willing to take on the topic that people like Harry Reid have been bringing up for years, despite his embattled history, despite his son's crazed involvement in Nevada and the whole Clyde and Bundy situation, things like that. What does this kind of document mean for somebody like you who is an experiencer? What are the opportunities of it mean?
You know, I think I'm just going to move on. Well, I am going to. I moved on. You know, this was really nothing that I was looking forward to. It was meaningless to me. I didn't think that anything would come of it, and it didn't. So, you know, I just think that, you know, if there would have been some sort of major disclosure, there would have been, would have been a really big game changer, and who knows what would have happened. And, you know, it would have discredited our government. It would have made them look like fools. It could have done them anything. Who knows? So we'll never know. But, you know, I just, the direction I would love to move in is to continue what I'm doing. However, you know, there's people out there that I want to meet. And, you know, in addition to, you know, one of the things I can't do a lot of times is see people face to face, and I want to hear some stories. And there's some people out there that I want to meet, and I'm not going to mention them, but I have a list of people, and I want to see them face to face, and I want to listen to their story. I want to see their eyes. I want to see them tell it, and I want to ask them questions. And, you know, I want to find out certain things that I wonder, not to poke holes in their story, but to find those things that possibly that, you know, that may strike a chord with me or a nerve, you know, whatever the case may be with me, and, that I can, confirm or not confirm, maybe, you know, can take a look at myself and try to discover, you know, more about me and my experiences. And, you know, I'm writing this book and I got to get it done. And I was promising by December, and it's not going to happen. There's too much going on. And
I thought
that, you know, COVID, I would be so, I mean, I thought I'd have so much time on my hands. I've never been so busy in my life. So
brother, it's not even about the time in the hand. It's about how the brain deceives you during this time, literally. Like, Like, it's been mind numbing.
Right.
That's the only way to put it, because it's not like I don't have time to devote to things. It's that I spend so much time just thinking about the other things.
Right. And it was so exhausting too at times, you know.
Yeah.
It was like, you know.
Oh, God,
you know,
yeah.
It's like I need, for some reason, I need a vacation. And, you know, it's not like I've been killing myself. But, you know, I have been, it's been busy night and day. You know, it's just all these things that when I thought I'd have these opportunities to kick back and have this time to do what I need to do, I couldn't, you know. And so.
Yeah.
So I need to make some time for me and get some stuff done.
Well, and with,
that's the plan.
Well, and that is the important plan. That's the important thing to do, especially with someone with a message in a show like yours, Cameron.
There's a message.
Well, it's so hard because it, like, as opposed to my show, I think your show kind of goes a lot more almost into the therapeutic realm and talking about the way that experiences impact the rest of your life and the way that they really change you as a person. We talk a lot of topics on this show. We talk a lot of social impact. However, I think your show goes a lot more inward and goes into a lot more introspection, Cameron.
Sometimes I like to think that, but that's part of it, certainly. And the other thing too is to, you know, there's a lot of people out there that haven't been heard yet. I want to get to those folks as well.
Well,
sure.
With that in mind, before we let you go, one last time for shameless self-promotion, Cameron, let everybody know where they can go to check you out, where they can go to help out with the fundraiser right now on GoFundMe, stuff like that.
Well, thank you for that, and thank you for the opportunity to be a guest tonight. It's nice to be a guest once in a while instead of have to do the work, although this is sometimes a little bit of work too. But I have a beautiful website, and that I do. I wouldn't say I'm a web artist, but it's something that I have to do to make ends meet myself. So check that out. It's www.myalienlifepodcast.com. When you click on that, you're going to see the address change to Inside the Guest Studio. It's just an all-encompassing website. There's stories in there and some of my favorites from different podcasts that I have, but it's a portal to take you to every episode that I've ever done. Also, every platform that carries podcasts. So you can listen to my podcast on every platform, including YouTube, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever. There's even a Hungarian link to the podcast, which is funny to see my podcast, in on a Hungarian website, but that's cool. And I love, that's one of my favorite things actually to see that. But, anyway, there's a bunch of stuff. I do have a GoFundMe, campaign going right now. It's kind of, we're about halfway there. And, so I lost some equipment, unfortunately, and, to get back, most of the files that I had on this computer, which wasn't backed up properly, I had to buy another computer and use that old computer as basically a hard drive and remove it myself. So had to get an older computer that was compatible with it. And anyway, there wasn't really anybody here to help me do that. So it became rather time consuming and sort of expensive. And so later on, I'd kind of like to do video, and I've dumped a lot of money into the podcast and at this time don't have what I need to be able to do it in video as well. So that's the goal, and hopefully we'll get there. I have some people that are interested in jumping on board and helping out, and I've already had some amazing people support me, and I gave a lot of really cool stuff away. And thank you to all of those people. Yeah. And I appreciate everything you do, and it's been amazing, and it's made me really appreciate humans in general, just because they've come to me and did it without question or wanting anything back. So thank you very much.
Yeah, man, it really, really has been great to see that online community rally around you and really lift you up in that way. So good for them on that fact, and good for you for everything that you have done to build that community around yourself and around people seeking truth, seeking that personal truth through their experience. And thank you for that, Cameron.
You're welcome. Thank you, sir.
Well, please do hold the line while we close things out, while you're online checking out all of the amazing stuff from My Alien Life and Cameron Logan. Make sure to stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast, dudesandbeer.com. That's where you can find everything. Our mirror site, soon to be our mother site, curiousrealm.com. All the documents that we talked about today, everything right there. Stop on by curiousrealm.com. Cannot wait until that launches in December. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other.
Thanks for listening to this Bye-bye. Episode of the Dudes and Beer podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.